I am delighted to be joined on the line by one of Ireland's most recent boxing world championship medalists, Grainne Walsh. Grainne, how's it going?
Hello, thanks very much for having me on. I'm delighted to be chatting to you.
Yeah, you've been a bit busy since coming home from world championships, I believe.
Yeah, it's been a hectic few weeks. Like, I took 2 weeks completely off and then been sort of tipping away at training, nothing too hectic, but I've been busy with things outside the ring as well and some great opportunities coming my way, thank God. So I'm just trying to enjoy it all and soak it all up as much as I can because it's a very short period of time that this kind of thing lasts for. So I want to just make sure I'm enjoying each step of it.
Well, you never know. You have such an exciting and like endearing story. So once people start hearing your story, then it's more likely that these opportunities will keep coming, no?
Yeah, well, hopefully, yeah. I just mean, like, even from a sporting perspective, like a career in sport is essentially quite short. And when it's over kind of thing. So, but yeah, I'm actually really interested in the whole storytelling thing. It's gas how it actually all happened because about 10 years ago, I wasn't able to answer the phone, like, or make appointments or anything like that. I was so socially awkward, whereas I've gotten so much more confident with my public speaking and stuff, thanks to the Dare to Believe program and just being exposed to that kind of thing. So you never know what kind of career path I'll end up taking, but for the moment I'm enjoying my career, boxing away, happy out to be competing, and then I'm exploring other options outside the ring as well in terms of public speaking and bits and bobs like that. So
Amazing. Right. Let's talk about inside the ring. So, bronze in the 65 kg weight category after beating the Olympic silver medalist from Paris last year. Talk to me about the moment that you realized after many years you had finally secured a world championship medal.
yeah, God, it's just mad. Even hearing you reading that back, it's like that happened in another lifetime. Like, but yeah, there's been so many ups and downs. Like, you're familiar enough with my story, and like a career in sport in general, there's so many ups and downs, and no one has it plain sailing. And like any good story, there's always that bit of downtime where you're trying to regroup and climb the ladder back up to the top again. So, it's just one of those kind of snakes and ladders things. But I knew going to the World Championships that I had actually learned so much from, particularly from Paris last year. I only had one fight in Paris and I underperformed. And there's many reasons I can kind of put it down to. I just didn't show up on the day. But having qualified 5 weeks before Paris, I found it really difficult to kind of regroup and get going again. Whereas I felt like my golden moment was nearly when I qualified because of all the things I'd been through.
Yeah.
But I learned so much from the whole experience in Paris, and I was eager to put it into practice then at the World Championships. And someone actually asked me before I went, what does success look like for you going to these worlds? And I probably would have had a different answer a couple of years ago. I always was like, oh, I have to win the gold, I have to do this, have to do that. But like, I kind of just went into the worlds with the mentality of I just want to enjoy every bit of it and like really be present, because when I've been at my most present and grounded at competitions, that's when the best version of me comes out. So it's easier to say that now as I'm sitting on a chair, but like, that's kind of what I've learned throughout the years, is just to try and enjoy the whole journey as much as I can, all the good days and the bad days, because the bad days make you appreciate the good days a bit more. So
How do you manage to stay grounded? Do you have any techniques while you're away and competing?
Another thing that I've learned throughout the years and through all my injuries was that I had to have very honest conversations with myself when I was injured, and like what was triggering the negative thoughts in my mind, and when I was missing out on things, what was making me feel worse, was actually watching what I was missing out on social media. And I found that was just a really, that was one of the main triggers for me, because yourself, like, social media is everyone's highlight of the best parts of their day and the best parts of their life, really. And that's all well and good when things are going great. But when they're not going so great, you don't really want to be seeing how great a time everybody else is having. That may sound selfish, but I just had to really look after myself in those moments. And I have found that that's been a massive coping thing for me now, being in competition, is like I've made the mistakes before of, I win a fight and oh, it's making the headlines and my ego loves reading about myself. Like, this is me a couple of years ago, but I've just come to realize now that like my circle is really small, and the people who were there for me when I had nothing are the people that are going to be with me when I have, you know, things to bring home from competitions too. So yeah, coming off social media has been a huge thing for me in competition, because it just keeps my focus on where it needs to be. And then afterwards, all that stuff will still be there when all is said and done, and when I'm home from competition, and I can do as much of that as I want. But when I'm in competition, I try to just keep my 2 feet on the ground. I bring my coloring book and my colors away with me, and I'm doing Duolingo and all those random bits and bobs that are not doom scrolling on social media. So that's one massive thing that I've learned throughout the years that seems to be working so far.
Oh my God, that like is such an important lesson that you learned. I kind of found that the same with myself, like when I was away in Tokyo, that when I removed myself from social media and I just kind of focused on really mundane things, it yeah. kind of helped me stay in the moment. Is that kind of like a message that you kind of try and share with maybe the younger generation? Because as you said, like you said something along the lines of it being selfish to not want to watch other people's success, but like you're actually minding yourself by doing that. So how is that selfish?
Yeah, I've always kind of been a bit of a people pleaser throughout my life. But I think as an athlete, and particularly an individual athlete, you do really have to put yourself first in situations like that. And I'm not a selfish person by nature in any way, but when things aren't going good and you see things that are actually affecting you, you do have to look after yourself first. Because I wasn't even able to be a good teammate, or I wasn't able to be a good friend to people, because I wasn't looking after myself. So I feel like I'm a better person for other people to be around when I'm looking after myself, if that makes sense. But yeah, it definitely is something that I try to share. And look, hindsight is great. And like when you get older, you get all this wisdom, and from all your kind of the downfalls, you do end up learning what works for you. But I do try and share my experiences and be as honest and transparent as I can, because I definitely have learned things the hard way. But again, I do agree that like my parents were trying to give me advice all through my life, and there's only a certain amount of it that you actually listen to, and then you end up realizing, okay, they were right when they gave me that advice. But sometimes it takes you to actually go through the hardship and come out the other side to realize those lessons.
Yeah, it's so annoying when you realize they were right all along, isn't it?
Oh, imagine how annoying it is as the parent trying to tell them, and you're banging your head off a stone wall, like, but then you end up realizing, you're like, okay, right, I see where you were coming from with that.
Yeah, but it nearly makes you kind of appreciate the relationship a little bit more, because they finally understand that you understand, and then there's like that mutual agreement. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly, exactly.
You spoke about your injuries and kind of like the hard times that you had. Could you just like share a little bit more in detail? Because obviously I would be aware of it, but just for the listeners.
So we don't have time to discuss all of them, but I'll briefly run through it. No, so my dad always said to me when I was growing up, because I came from a soccer background, like that was my original kind of pathway in sport, that I wanted to be a professional soccer player. Ended up wanting to be like Katie Taylor, put on a pair of gloves, never look back. Anyway, my dad always said to me that I would be able to succeed if I was lucky enough to not get badly injured. So anyway, I never had any injuries. And then in 2020, the start of 2020, I just before the Olympic qualifier, I ended up getting injured. I ruptured the ligament in my right thumb. And for 3 years, I ended up having five of the exact same injuries, four of which required surgery. So you can imagine how difficult that was. And I genuinely thought I was the most unfortunate person on planet Earth. I blamed everything. I'm born on Friday the 13th. I thought that was why this was happening to me. But it turns out, when I look back at it all, and I missed out on the whole Tokyo thing, but every single time an injury happened, I thought it was the worst thing in the world. But when I look back at it all, each of them taught me a different lesson and showed me that like that wasn't my time, or it was trying to steer me down a different path. But like I still had things to learn and changes to make. And essentially you end up finding out how badly you do actually want it. And if you don't, that's okay as well. But at least you'll have that answer. And that was, I honestly, in those 3 years, I learned more about myself than I could in a full lifetime. So I look back and I'm actually really grateful for all the things that happened to me and the resilience that it's given me. And it's given me a great story to be able to share with people and to prove to people that, like, if you actually believe and you have a team around you that believe in you, you really can get there. So I don't have any regrets about any of it, because I look back on it with nothing but really gratitude, to be honest.
Yeah, and it kind of makes you appreciate the
Oh,
when you do get
massively.
there a lot more, doesn't it?
Oh my God, yeah. Like, when I even think of going to the Tokyo before the Tokyo cycle, or before the Tokyo qualifiers, and I think of, like, how ready I was then in comparison to Paris, I was nowhere near ready to qualify for the Olympics. And, like, I'm able to admit that now, but obviously at the time I was like, oh my God, like, it was the worst thing in the world because I thought I was ready, but there was no way I was ready when I look back and compare it to how ready I was for Paris. And that's, again, that's something that you don't ever see it at the time. And even when I see younger athletes now getting injured and stuff, and they're asking for advice, and I asked all the same questions, you know, my man and dad were always saying to me, oh, what's for you won't pass you. And if I had heard any more of them, I was going to flip. But turns out, again, they were all right, because I realized that the Olympics was for me, and I just needed to wait that little bit longer and work that little bit harder and make tweaks along the way. And like you said about that appreciation, I just, when that actually happened for me, like, all of it made sense, and I was just so grateful, like.
How did you not quit though? So, like, it's fair enough getting injured once, twice, maybe a
Yeah.
third time, but the fact that the same thing kept happening over and over again in different ways, like, how did you not quit? How did you keep going?
I don't know, because when I look, I was trying to explain this. I was in a school yesterday explaining my story, and the kids had the same questions. They were like, oh, so how did you actually not just turn around and think that this was a sign not to do this anymore? But, like, after the fourth injury, like, if I had a crystal ball at the start and could see all these injuries ahead of me, I would have just been like, okay, I'm not ready. I'm not able to go through all that. But when you get injured once, you don't anticipate it happening again. So I was just picking myself back up and trying to get better and improve and whatever. And then it did happen again. And I was like, right, there's no way it could happen again. And then it did. So it was just this recurring thing that I just felt like, what am I actually going to do to break this whole cycle of me being so unlucky? But having the people around me that I had, and, like, after the fourth injury, the fourth surgery, my surgeon was saying to me, he was like, Grainne, like, this is not sustainable for your handheld going forward for the rest of your life, because, like, I can't just keep operating every time you get a knock on your hand. Like, that's not going to happen going forward. So he was like, you, if this happens again, it's the end of your career. And obviously I was terrified when I heard that, because I was 26, hadn't been to the Olympics, I hadn't even touched the surface of my potential, really. So that was a very scary conversation to have. And then it did happen another time. But the last time, the little silver lining was the fact that I didn't need surgery. So it wasn't actually curtains on my career. So I'm technically still on my last life, but we're not going to talk about that because, you know, we're rolling with the punches, as they say, at the moment. But yeah, I don't know how I didn't give up. But having the people around me and the belief from my family and my coach and stuff was kind of what kept me going. And because I didn't feel like I had given enough to boxing, but my hand was just this massive thing that was stopping me at that time. But I knew that I had the mentality to get there had my hand have held up. Do you know what I mean? Because a couple of years ago, I wasn't as focused as I needed to be when I had my full health and my body was in tip top shape. I didn't have the mentality. So I just needed to ride that really long wave to when the two aligned, and then everything happened for me, thank God.
What did your coach say whenever you got injured, or how did your coach kind of keep you believing in yourself?
Yeah, he was really good at, like, hiding how he felt, because I knew he was concerned about, like, oh my God, how am I going to keep her going when I don't even know what to be saying to her to motivate her, kind of thing. But the final icing on the cake, this is a hilarious story. So, after the five injuries, and I was on my way back, and it was January of 2023. It was just before the nationals in January 23, and this was in the lead into the Paris qualifier. So I needed to win the nationals in order to be in a chance of going to Paris. And 2 weeks before, I had a sore back, and my coach, me and him, were arguing on the phone, because I was like, I'm just going to rest this evening. I'm going to train tomorrow. I'll have a bath and whatever. And he was like, no, go out and do 15 or 20 minutes. So I did. I went out, did my 15, 20 minutes, and I left two dumbbells, 10 kg cast iron dumbbells, on a shelf. And I went to turn around and one of them rolled off and hit my baby toe. Right? Ended up breaking my baby toe and needed actual pinky toe surgery. And I thought this was going to put me out of the tournament that was coming up. And he felt terrible because he was the one that was after forcing me to train. But ended up everything worked out and I ended up winning the nationals. But that was just it was just a mad story to think that I had come through five hand injuries and then a broken baby toe just to finish it off.
Do you think that might have been a moment for your coach as well, where he realized, okay, Grania actually knows her body now. Like, if she says she needs rest, I also have to listen to her.
Exactly. Because before, like when I was younger and stuff, I did obviously take all of his advice. And I, but like after a while, you know yourself from being in sport, like you do end up just knowing exactly how your body ticks and what it needs. And it's not necessarily what works for one will work for everyone, but you do learn what makes you tick. And at that moment, I knew that I shouldn't have done an extra session, but obviously we can laugh about it and stuff now, but he felt terrible. Like he really felt terrible.
What did you say to each other after you won the bronze medal?
Oh, yeah. So he's a very like my coach. This is my coach now. He's not with the Irish team or anything anymore, but he's my coach from home. And like he's a very tough loving, like he wouldn't give compliments or anything. Like he's Eastern European, so he's very stern and you know, enough is never really enough. But like I went back to the club and I went to see the kids and all with my medal. And like he said a few words about like, you know, Grania's been working away for years and she's so determined and said all these lovely things that he's never ever said to my face. So I was nearly crying when he was saying all this in front of everybody. So I knew he was really proud, but he tells everyone else how proud he is of me. He just never actually tells me. So that was lovely to hear.
Oh, that's so nice. He has to keep you in a certain box to keep you working hard.
Yes. Exactly. I can never, you know, that I get humbled on the daily, so
Speaking of humbling, this is like my own curiosity now. But how painful is it being hit in the face?
oh, that's a great question. And I think that was probably the main intrigue as to why I wanted to start boxing when I was 16. I was like, I wonder what it feels like to hit someone and to get hit. But like I was even listening to Kelly Harrington speaking on Nicky Byrne's podcast the other day and like the obvious question is does it hurt? But like, unless you get a really solid shot that you're kind of like, oh God, but it's more a thing of like, oh, I need to get that one back, you know? The only really painful shot is a body shot. And like any boxer will tell you that. Like a good body shot, you can't stand up. It just wins you, like. So, but no, adrenaline and everything. Sure, I've broken my nose in fights and stuff before. And like you don't really feel all that much until afterwards when all the adrenaline wears off. And then you're in bits. But during the fight, you don't actually feel that much because the adrenaline is so high, like.
Okay, so for any of the young people who might be listening who want to get involved in boxing, but the thing that's holding them back is the fear of getting hit in the face, what advice would you give them?
The advice I would give is no, actually, this is hilarious because I was only saying this in the school yesterday as well. The very first spar I had, I hit the girl and she cried, and then I cried because I made her cry. So the two of us were just standing in the ring crying. And this is when I was 16. But yeah, no, I think like the thing that drew me to boxing, no, aside, like jokes aside, the whole hitting in the face is just part and parcel of the sport. But the discipline of it and like any exercise for kids is obviously unreal, but like I just loved coming, even coming from a team sport with soccer, like going to an individual sport and seeing that like the work that you put in 95% of the time you'll get the rewards for it. Whereas in a team sport, you're obviously hoping that the other people on the team have the same work ethic as you. But getting involved in any sort of club or that's why I got into it as well, because I figured if I just joined a gym. Like, you know, motivation will be high one day, it'll be low the next day. I just needed that kind of sense of community. And that's what I found in my boxing club. And like anyone that goes to a boxing club, it doesn't matter where you're from, who your family are, where you live. It literally, everyone is an equal in a boxing club. And that's the most special thing about it.
That's so lovely. Okay, we need to talk about your lovely partner, Anna McGann, because while you were away fighting at the World Championships, she was representing Ireland at the Rugby World Cup. Talk to me about that dynamic.
Yes. Yeah, it's Oh, it's obviously amazing that the fact that the two of us were away, both in the UK actually, just different parts, representing Ireland on the world stage, and we were able to support each other from afar. It was kind of a blessing and a curse because we would have loved to be able to be there for each other and to witness. Like, I would have loved her to be ringside there when I won the medal, and same when she was flying it over there and scoring tries and everything. Like, I would have loved to be pitch side for that, but we just it didn't allow for us to do that. But yeah, it's just amazing the dynamic between the two of us. We just completely get, you know, we just understand, because sometimes it is hard to explain to people not involved in high level sport what it takes and when you need a little break from talking or whatever it may be. But like, when you both understand the pressures and the stress of high level sport and within that exact same time frame. Yeah, it was amazing to come home then and be able to celebrate both of our successes together. That was the great thing about it. We both got time off together, which our schedules don't often align, but thankfully this time they did.
Lovely, lovely. And like, were you able to be in contact much during the championships?
Yeah, I was like I said, I don't be on social media and stuff, and I think she went TikTok famous when she was
I
at the World Cup.
know,
I'm
we
not
all know
even
that
on
Anna did.
TikTok. Yeah, I'm not even on TikTok. So I get slagging on the daily for the fact that like I'm not even on it. And she's over there like properly going viral and the whole lot. So I'm such an old soul in that sort of thing. But we're exact opposites in that way. But yeah, like we were able to communicate. Yeah, sure. I was on FaceTime and whatever, like WhatsApp and stuff, but I just don't like seeing any of the social media stuff. Even she showed me the posts and stuff that she had up after I won. And like, I'm so glad I didn't see any of that because all the girls were watching and all. And I just don't want to know that the whole world is watching, even though I'm kind of aware in the back of my mind. I just don't need to see it when I'm in it, you know? But afterwards, it's
Yeah.
lovely to look back on all that when there's no pressure involved and I'm finished the competition. But yeah, it was just a mad few weeks for the two of us. But yeah, like I said, getting home, we were able to go away on a holiday and stuff. So we were able to enjoy it together then.
Yeah, oh my God, that video of them watching you
Yeah.
compete. It was
I was nearly
so lovely.
sobbing.
I was nearly
Oh
sobbing,
God.
sobbing into my phone.
Yeah, but that's it. It's lovely for me to look back on that now. But like at the time, I'm glad I didn't see that until afterwards because my emotions were not able.
Of course, of course. Are you competitive with each other? Like, do you like, are you like, I train more than you do, or like, my sport's more tough
No,
than your sport?
No, we are definitely competitive. Like we went out a few weeks ago for a round of golf with our ma, and like at the start we're not like very frequent with the whole golfing thing. We wouldn't be like seasoned pros, but we started off and we were just taking a handy, and then when we were like neck and neck in terms of scoring, we were counting every single shot and calling each other out and everything. So yeah, we are competitive in a lot of ways, but not in our own sports. We're not like, because it's hard to compare apples with oranges, really, in fairness. And yeah, just she's an animal in the gym and all, so I'm just like, yeah, no, I'm not even gonna try and compete with that.
Sorry, I've seen you in the gym. You two are also an animal in the
Thank you.
gym. Let's just go back to boxing for a second. So, you said that all of your injuries kind of taught you a lot of lessons along the way, but is there like one specific lesson that kind of boxing has taught you that you're gonna definitely carried you through your career so far, but is going to carry you through for the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think it's not even actually injury related, this one, but a very expensive lesson I learned was actually only last year. It was at the first world qualifier for Paris, and I was walking to the ring for the qualification fight. And as I was walking, so I was 9 minutes away from qualifying for the Olympics, obviously my lifelong dream. So I was thinking to myself, oh my God, if I win this fight now, I'm going to get the Olympic ring tattoo. I was thinking of the Olympic village. I was thinking of all the gear that I was going to be getting. All of these materialistic things that would have naturally followed if I had gone through the process and actually focused on what I needed to be focused on. Whereas my mind was already 10 steps ahead of where I needed to be. And I ended up losing that fight. It was a controversial decision, but I ended up losing that fight. And I promised myself from that moment, had I ever got the opportunity to go to another qualifier or go to any fight or anything, is to stay in the present moment and not to think even 5 minutes ahead. Because realistically, tomorrow is promised to nobody. And like, I've made the mistake of looking too far ahead and thinking this, that, and the other is going to happen. I just have to stay where I am at that exact time. So when I went to the next qualifier in Bangkok last June, I had four fights to qualify, and I was in the exact same place walking to the ring for my qualification fight, 9 minutes away from getting my ticket. And I did not let any of that enter my head. I had different kind of strategies and things to be telling myself to keep myself on track. But that's definitely something that I will carry for the rest of my career, is not to think of, oh, even if I win this, I'll be getting better funding, or I'll be getting a gold medal or a silver medal, whatever it may be. Keep your feet on the ground and focus on the 3 minutes in front of you, one round at a time. And that's definitely one thing that I'll be carrying through for the rest of my career.
Oh, Grania, that's so nice. I do have to ask, though, did you end up getting the Olympic ring tattoo?
I did. Of course I did.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
You had to.
I had to, yeah. I was actually, another time I was in a school, I was explaining to the kids that because I only had one fight in Paris, I was a little bit skeptical of getting the Olympic ring tattoo, because I was like, oh, you know,
Come
sometimes you just have those
on.
kind of doubts. But then one of the kids put their hand up and said, oh, I have a suggestion. There's five Olympic rings. You could have one ring to represent each hand injury, and that all of them together got you to the Olympics. I'm nearly choking up even telling you that story. Like, isn't
Oh
that
my
so wholesome to come
God.
from a child? Like,
Oh my God.
so
Oh
I've
my
been
God,
telling
that is
everyone
so
that ever since I've
sweet.
gone to that school. I swear, it makes me really emotional thinking that that was, you know, the positive spin. Like, I just think the innocence and the purity of children is so special. That's why I love going to the schools, because you can hear anything at any time. They don't have any filter. But that was just something that I will never forget from being in that school, and I'll definitely be bringing that forevermore and telling that story about my Olympic tattoo.
I know, do you know what? I don't think that's the last time you're gonna see that kid. I feel like that
Yeah,
kid is gonna
really.
like is gonna pop up in the future, and they're gonna be like, oh, that was me, and you're gonna be like, oh my God, we
Yeah.
did it for you.
What a full
Oh,
circle moment that would be.
Do you know what? Full circle moments happen all the time, and I fully believe that will happen.
Yeah. Oh, I'm the same. Yeah.
And we're just going to finish on one last thing. Grainne Walsh, what is next?
Okay, what is next?
What is next for Grainne Walsh?
So we have had a pretty quiet year this year, actually, because we were kind of between two boxing organizations. So it was a very stop start year for us. But what's next for us now is our nationals are on the 9th of January, and they tend to always put the nationals on straight after Christmas. So there's no nice desserts or nice anything for me at Christmas. It'll be training hard and dieting and all that. But yeah, so the 9th of January are our nationals, and that will kind of springboard us into a really busy year next year. We're hoping to be nearly making up for a quiet year this year, and there'll be loads of tournaments next year, because next year is our chance to gain loads of experience. Because believe it or not, midway through 2027 is the first qualifier for LA. I just can't believe it's coming around that quick already. But yeah, so I'm taking it one step at a time. Again, I'm not looking too far ahead. The nationals are the next thing for me, so that's kind of what I'm focusing on at the minute.
Amazing, Grania. So lovely to talk to you. And once again, I said this to you privately, but seeing you get that bronze medal, I was just over the moon for you. So congratulations.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed the chat as well. Hopefully people understood me a little bit more.
They definitely did. Thank you.
Thanks.